believe, really, sometimes that David Bowie was responsible for all of those. Did you understand, though, when you heard the news last week about the publishing rights to all his work being sold, what was going on? I didn't either really know. So we've got a music industry insider to explain it all. Michael Infante is CEO of One Media, who did deals last year with the producers of Take That, Heatwave and Culture Club, and also bought the rights to over 250 songs by Kid Creole and the Coconuts. They acquired the catalogue of the late US country star Don Williams as well. He's also been hanging on the line for an age. So Michael, apologies for keeping you hanging on, but thanks for joining us. How are you?
I'm good, thank you, Swayne. Pat, yourself?
Yeah, I'm all right. Really nice to talk to you. So when you acquire a catalogue, what do you actually own? I keep saying the publishing rights, but what does that mean? You get paid every time one of those songs is on the radio or the telly or something like that?
Well, just going back to your snippets, I didn't hear The Man Who Sold the World, so I think...
Oh, sorry. I'll rectify that later for you, Michael.
There we go, The Man Who Sold the World. There are several rights surrounding music, and you have the publishing rights, you have the master rights, you have the neighbouring rights and the sync rights. These are all different rights that surround each song. So if we take someone like Lennon and McCartney, they wrote the songs, they own the lyrics, they own the master recordings, or their record label does, and there are many rights that go in. So you would get a right or a publishing revenue stream from the lyrics, the words, you'd get a right from the radio play when you good people play the music on the radio, and then you get another income stream from where the record is sold or streamed. So with the Bowie deal, Warner's bought the half the rights last year, and they completed all the rights acquisitions this year. The way this is really panning out now in the last probably 24, 36 months is that music, legacy music, like classical music and Bowie and the Stones and the Beatles are now the classics of the future, are proven to having very robust royalty streams, income that is now been good for 40 years, been good for the next 40 years. So it's becoming a currency, it's becoming tradable, it's like a stock and share, you can buy into it.
And when you buy these, who did you pay for the rights to Bowie's music? Because if he'd still been around, of course, and sadly he's not, it would have been him and his company, and his record company.
Yeah, I mean, we can look at the Don Williams, the country and western singer that we bought at tail end of last year, and one of the biggest deals that we've done. And that goes to the estate, Tim Williams, the family, and the legacy. The rights are good. Depending on the territory you're working in, for 70 years after the death of the writer and composer, and 70 years after the release of the first record. So the income streams and the royalties to be collected have longevity.
God, and then I suppose in 70 years, probably won't be you at that point, Michael, but in 2065 or whatever that is, you can make a decision about whether it's still lucrative and whether to try and renew.
Well, you'll own the rights in perpetuity, so they go what we call the main after that period of time, which means others can share in that royalty, like a patent. The big companies, the funds that are now getting involved, we see hedge funds, banks, everybody putting into royalty income streaming. We ourselves are a public listed company, and people buy shares in our business, dividends and or revenues that we're able to sweat from these assets.
Well, exactly how lucrative is it? I mean, David Bowie, we're never not going to be playing him on the radio. The legacy of music is phenomenal, and you're always going to turn on radio stations and hear those tunes, and people will stream them, and TV, I'm sure people will perform them in tribute shows and the like as well. But then you hear about Kid Creole and the Coconuts, with no disrespect intended whatsoever, 250 songs bought there. Stool Pigeon is the first one that comes to mind for me, because I always loved that song. Are they enough in circulation to make any decent money?
Well, of course, you know, it is a question of scale. I mean, David Bowie's catalogue went for circa 200 million, we believe. And August Darnell, a.k.a. Kid Creole, and Annie, I'm not your daddy, went for substantially less. So it's a question of aggregating lots of small songs and putting them into a catalogue, thus making a big catalogue. One Media controls 250,000 tracks of music. And in that long tail, we have a great collection of income that is policed by us with our own software called TCAT, which is a technical copyright analysis tool that examines and searches stores to make sure that revenues and income is being derived correctly and not pirated.
We hear that artists can earn a pittance from streaming these days. Obviously, the bigger you are, and it doesn't get bigger than the Thin White Duke, the more money you are going to make. But is it worth owning a back catalogue on for streaming rights? Because aren't we told that artists get paid just pennies or fractions of pennies for some of those plays?
Indeed, and it's the same as YouTube and a lot of the other stores that stream content. You've got to remember that when you start talking about aged catalogue, and let's call it legacy catalogue, One Media trades in that all the time. If we go back 20 years before the digital revolution, a lot of those products would have been on LP, CD and record, would have been deleted. You wouldn't have found them in a store, so the artist would have been earning absolutely zero from any record sales. Now in the virtual stores, and there are some 600 digital stores that we deal with, every one of those stores carries every music track. So you're looking at 75 million tracks on Spotify, Apple Music, etc. The stores are, they have, you know, totally elastic rules. They can take absolutely everything. So it's down to you, the consumers, to actually decide what you want to listen to, build your playlist, and play it in your car, or at home, or through your smart speakers. So life goes on, and actually the music is 100% more accessible than it would have been without the digital revolution.
I heard a tale, Michael, naming no names in case I get in trouble and it's wrong and I get sued, but there's radio operators, commercial radio operators who around the world who are doing similar things, buying up rights to well-known back catalogues. I think Taylor Swift's was the one I was thinking of, although that was a whole other storm, wasn't it, about whether she had the rights to her own songs anymore and went and re-recorded them. But if you own, say, the radio station or group of radio stations that play the songs, you then get the PRS money for the songs that you're playing on the radio. So you own them, you play them. The more you play them, the more money you get.
Well, there's PPL, PRS, there's a number of collection societies. Certain can be assigned, certain can't be assigned. Artists are protected with their PPL and their performing arts, and that actually, under statute, they shouldn't be assigning, and they can't. The PPL stand by that. PRS, which is the writer's income, that can be assigned. I've not heard too many stories about many radio stations investing in catalogues, but hey, it probably is the case.
It's an interesting way of utilising your investment. Michael, it's fascinating to talk to you. Thank you very much indeed for coming on. Michael Infante, CEO of One Media, who've done deals with Take That, Heatwave, Culture Club. And Michael, I'm not going to play Man Who Sold the World because I mentioned Stool Pigeon and then I wanted to hear it. But you're going to get like 1p from this, aren't you now?
Oh, if that. No. Actually, playing on the radio, you guys pay a lot more than that.
Okay, here comes your revenue. Thank you, Michael.